With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going. You're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the publisher fight. It's time for the publisher fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that New England power.
Hi, how's it going? And welcome to the first ever Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm editor-in-chief of Video Ad News. If you don't know us, we're a trade publication covering the video and OTT or TV advertising industry based here in London. You might have noticed that we don't mention Video Ad News, or VAN as we're sometimes known. Well, that's because we'll soon be rebranding to Video Week, and this is the first step in that direction. So we're going to have a new website. We'll be introducing a whole range of new services that we'll be announcing over the coming weeks and months. Video Week is something that has been on our agenda for a long time. And in all honesty, we've been enjoying the lockdown period and having the time to work on it. Okay, so we've got some really great guests lined up over the next few weeks. Very excited to say that our first is the legendary Keith Weed, who's probably best known for his time spent as CMO of Unilever. But these days, Keith is wearing a multitude of hats. He's far from retired. And in this episode, we're speaking to him as president of the Advertising Association. If you do enjoy the podcast, please do go along to the App Store. Give us a nice positive rating. It helps us to be found and for other people to find the podcast. So now I'll cross over to my conversation with Keith, a conversation I particularly enjoyed. And yeah, I sincerely hope you do too.
Your wife's extraordinary times, and I have my three adult children all working from home here, so they're working from home is actually working from our home, and we're all together. My eldest, who's 29, and my youngest, who are 24, are both working sort of in a normal way, morning to afternoon, but my middle son works in sports events, and there aren't any sports events, so he's effectively out of work right now. Until the world starts again. So he's doing an awful lot of gardening, I'm paying him as a gardener. So if nothing else, after all this, our garden will look a lot better. And I, right now, actually have been very busy, but based on so many of the organisations I'm involved in going through significant change as it impacts many, many people. And I, like others, have various members of the family in different situations. I have a sister who has had a major operation, who's self-isolating up in Scotland. I managed to get a Facebook portal to her, courtesy of Facebook. Thank you very much, Facebook, as I did to my in-laws who are in their 90s in Norfolk. And it's a way of keeping connected with them on a visual basis. Because when you say self-isolation, the real word there is isolation. And I think we can get isolated very quickly. And even if you're working from home, emails, of course, are important, and so are phone calls. But I would really encourage people to use FaceTime and video WhatsApp. And of course, everyone's using Zoom to make sure you also can see each other, because we're humans and humans like to be able to see and connect. And I worry as the weeks go on whether people feel isolated, lonely, and all the impacts that will follow.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I completely agree with you. I think the house party app is the you know, the one that's in vogue, I think, at the moment for a lot of people. And we had to get together with friends from, you know, who we're all absolutely hopeless for actually calling each other. But we had friends from Canada, Australia. I was speaking to their kids. You know, these are children that I've only seen, you know, Facebook or sort of photos on Facebook of before. So I think in a strange way, when you do the video thing, it can actually bring people together in a way that in a way that we weren't actually previously. So in some ways we're closer, and yeah, I think other ways we're further apart. So I mean, your time at Unilever sort of came to an end last year, but you're still extremely active on a number of fronts. So I think, you know, probably a good starting point might be to sort of tell us what you're up to and, yeah, what you're involved in.
Yes, I was at Unilever for a long time, as you know, and especially those last 9 years when I was the chief marketing and communications officer, which was marketing, but also leading sustainability for Unilever and communications. And it was a tremendous time when the business grew well, and I certainly learned a lot about brands with purpose and environmental and social sustainability as we shaped our agenda. And that was great fun. But like all things, it's good to move on to a different chapter. And what I wanted to do was have a portfolio of roles to bring some diversity into my life in a different way. And although I thoroughly enjoyed my time at Unilever and still very close with my colleagues there, I was also flying around the world. We're in 197 countries and spending a lot of time on planes. And I sort of felt that actually what I'd like to do is try and get something that's a little bit more UK focused as far as a lifestyle. So I'm I'm a director or a trustee of a portfolio of different companies. I'll come and touch on that in a second. I'm also sort of putting things back into the industry. I'm president of the Advertising Association. I'm also president of the History of Advertising Trust. I can talk to those a little later as well. And then on a different wavelength, I am also an angel investor in several startups. In fact, I've spent a lot of time talking to the startups over recent weeks because there's a lot of lessons that one's learned from many years in industry, which are very applicable now. The basic things about keeping yourself liquid and cash flow and managing costs, which we all know, but in a startup world, it's much more challenging when you really haven't got the breadth and depth of resources to lean back on. And in my portfolio, I am a board director of WPP, the Global Advertising Services Group. I'm also an advisor for different companies, McLaren Formula One, Tribe, and things like that. And then I have a suite of charities. I will be the next president and chairman of the board for the Royal Horticultural Society, which do things like Chelsea Flower Show, etc. I love gardens and gardening. I'm also on the board of Grange Park Opera, because I love opera as well, and Business in the Community, which is a charity about responsible business network, which reflects my commitment to work around environmental and social sustainability. And that combination of different roles enables me to work 4 days a week rather than six and a half. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And it's different, but very challenging right now, particularly the charity side. I think coming out of the weeks and months ahead of us, the businesses, of course, are hugely impacted, as indeed are individuals. But charities are going to be particularly hit by a combination of not having the depth of resources and reserves, but also people pull back on charitable giving when times get tough.
Yeah, you're speaking to somebody who had a business producing videos for charities just before, around the time of the last financial crash. And yeah, the money dried up very quickly, not long after. Partly, not just in terms of people not giving money, but also financial institutions pulling back on that sort of investment spend. So yeah, hopefully this time around we'll be able to sort of keep the charities afloat and maybe encourage the business world to do the same. You mentioned you're president of the advertising associations. People have mixed views on a lot of different trade bodies. Sometimes they're perceived as being more around creating events, but I think the advertising association is very much one that often sets the agenda for the rest of the industry. As generally speaking, I think the buy side tends to be the one who sort of pushes forward ethics and various initiatives. So what are your priorities as president?
Yes, you're right. The Advertising Association in the UK is quite a unique body. It pulls together advertisers, but also advertising agencies, publishers, media owners. So the council, the Advertising Association Council, which I chair, has nearly 30 people on it. But they're a whole cross-section of, on one side, Google and Facebook, on the other side, the newspapers, Channel 4, ITV, the whole cross-section of people from across the industry, right the way through to the trade bodies of the advertisers and the agencies, so ISBAR and the IPA. So it's a very broad church, and quite simply, the mission of the Advertising Association is to promote the role and rights of responsible advertising and its value to people, society, businesses, and the economy. And what do I mean by that? Advertising, I think, often gets a bit of a bad name. And funny enough, if advertising did such a good job for its own industry that it does for the brands that are built and the businesses that are built through advertising, it would be in a very different place. But I think advertising is often seen as something a little sort of, you know, trivial, but in reality, you know, it funds a huge amount of entertainment which we all engage in. If you use Google Maps or you post on Facebook or tweet, all those are courtesy of advertising supported services, but of course through to ITV and Channel 4, and indeed it funds the free press. You can say, you know, part of the backbone of democracy is the free press, and advertising plays a major role in that. So the role of advertising in bringing us entertainment and service is one thing, but the other side is it builds brands and businesses, and it really is a sort of canary in the mine on industry. So as we go into these challenges right now, one of the first things that will be hit will be advertising, as the initial response will be to slow down or turn off the tap slightly on advertising. And indeed, when we come out the other side, one of the first things to start growing will be advertising, because advertising connects brands and services with people. And in that sense, it also then drives the economy. And £1 invested in advertising delivers £6 to GDP. So it's a real driver of economic growth and dynamism. So what's my priorities as president? Well, I've been quite single-minded and focused on one issue, and that is trust. And what I mean by trust is people trusting in the industry, trusting in advertising, because at the end of the day, brands are built on trust. A brand without trust is just a product, and advertising without trust is just noise. And we have been losing trust in advertising year in, year out, not just here in the UK. This is an international challenge as well, over a long period of time. And we need to draw a line under that and start rebuilding trust, because if you trust in advertising, it's then a really helpful vehicle. If you don't trust in advertising, it's completely useless. Now the good news is we haven't gone past the point of no return, and still more people believe and trust in advertising, and quite rightly so, than don't. But it's a trend that needs addressing, and we've put a body in place to start working on that.
How do you think this problem has come about? You know, in terms of the you know, trust in advertising, do you think that the big brands are equally responsible for this, or, you know, is it just that in digital environments, they allow, you know, there's no barrier to entry, and pretty much anyone can advertise, and there are a lot of unscrupulous players who advertise all sorts of malevolent things? Or do you think that it's more of a, possibly more to do with cynicism in society about what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve? And even when we're trying to do something good, that it's perceived as being just because you're trying to flog something and not because you actually believe in the message or the product.
Well, you won't be surprised if I answer, say it's multifaceted. So it's a little bit of all of what you said, but yeah, you can unpick this. So people up until the 80s enjoyed advertising as much as they enjoyed the television programs. And what's happened since then, two things have happened, funny enough. More recently, the TV programs have got better with some great content. That's fantastic news. But I'd also argue the advertising has got worse, including on TV. So I think one of the challenges is, are we rewarding people for the interruption? So there's sort of two types of advertising. There's interruption advertising, which we know really well, and then there's seek-out advertising, if you're going to want to find a recipe or how to clean your home or a hairstyle, or indeed entertainment. And that is growing and growing very strongly amongst the digital platforms. But on the interruption advertising, which we know well, and this is where you're watching a program and an ad comes on, which is paying for the program and more, we need to, I think, reward people in that interruption with something which is engaging and also useful. And I think some of the skills of advertising, for all sorts of reasons, have diluted over the years. But you're completely right to say digital has then magnified that. And it's magnified that in a couple of areas, one of which is the feeling of bombardment that people get, particularly when they see the same ad over and over again. And that leads to the second part, which is frequency. And the combination of bombardment and frequency really undermines people's liking of advertising and indeed trust. And the third area, which we are working on, but is another one of the issues, is around data and people seeing misuse of data and hence lack of trust in giving data. Because online, you're giving data in return for services as well. And that's that information exchange and value exchange, when in balance, is good. And when it's out of balance, that's more of a challenge. So what we've been doing as the advertising associations, we've set up a working group which is chaired by ISBAR, and ISBAR is the Trade Association for Advertisers, and the IPA, and the IPA is the Trade Association for Advertising Agencies. And the two heads of ISBAR and the IPA are chairing this working group. And we've come up with five actions, one around reducing bombardment, another around addressing frequency, another around data use, so tackling the three big underminers of trust. But then two other things as well. We've got five actions right now, one of which is actually to promote and make people aware of the fabulous work of the Advertising Standards Association, the ASA. And the ASA regulates TV advertising and has done for years, but it also regulates digital advertising, which I think people misunderstand and are less aware. So what we are doing, it's a self-regulating body. What we're doing as a test first in Scotland is testing that if we raise the awareness of the ASA, will that build trust that people know that advertisers are you have someone who is checking that what they're saying is legal and truthful. And the fifth action is around making more aware the positive impact of advertising. Of course, we're seeing a lot of that right now, the positive impact of using advertising to educate people about how to wash their hands, or indeed the steps they should take to keep themselves safe, and using sort of advertising as public information and enabling people to be connected with messages that are important to them. So those are the five action plans that we're following. And we've made some good progress. We've got much more to do. And as we make more progress on those five action plans, of course, we'll then look at others as well. But it's going to be a long journey. But like all these things, it starts with a single step. And if we don't start this journey, we'll only see the ongoing decline in trust.
Yeah. I think we'll return to the coronavirus theme, because I think it's it's all-consuming and it's pretty hard to escape it. But I mean, I know many people in the industry are extremely nervous about the impact that they're going to see on advertising spend. And you know, whilst I recognize that it's going to vary on a case-by-case basis, but I mean, broadly speaking, how do you think brand advertisers are likely to respond in the current crisis?
Well, the first thing will happen is a survival instinct in companies, and we're seeing that right now. Mm-hmm. So when a crisis happens, the leader of the business has different things they look at, one of which, of course, is they look at their workforce and how they can help and support the workforce at a difficult time. They think about their customers, how they can carry on serving their customers. They also think about their suppliers. Do they need support? Small suppliers, small customers, cash flow? Are there going to be problems about their supply coming in? And then the CFO, the chief financial officer, is very focused on liquidity and costs and ensuring that they have enough cash to keep going. And one of the first things you can do when you're concerned about all the above is you reduce your spend, and you reduce your spend across all sorts of things. But advertising appears like something you can do which won't have a big initial impact. And of course, it doesn't have a big initial impact, but it has a huge impact tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. So I can understand people turning the tap down a little bit, and we'll see that, of course, across all sorts of different expenditures in the P&L. But if you don't prepare for the bounce that's going to happen in the future, of course, you'll miss it. So you will have all the negative side of the challenge we have right now, but you won't have any of the positive sides of the recovery coming out. And one of the things I've been saying to the businesses that I advise and engage with is don't think about this as hibernation. Think of this period as preparation. So, of course, we've got to keep going on the businesses as we are, but we should also be preparing for what's going to happen post all these challenges. And certainly the businesses, if I look back at the financial crisis back into 2008, 2009, the businesses which carried on investing came out even stronger. And I know that seems very difficult to think about right now with all the challenges we have around us and the importance of focusing on people's health and safety. But actually, if we don't, the economic impact post all this will be severe as well. So let's not have all the challenges and the tragedy of COVID-19 to then be followed by all the challenges and the tragedy of an economic slump. So I think people in businesses need to try and think about, yes, keeping their people, their customers and their suppliers included in that, but keeping their broad stakeholders safe and vibrant as they can. But also we should in parallel be preparing for what happens next. And advertising, as I said, is a tremendous canary in the mine. So the fact that advertising is one of the first industries to feel some of the cuts, they will also be one of the first industries to have the investment being stepped up on the way out. And if I took my own example, back in 2009, I was just starting as the chief marketing officer of Unilever. I made the case, which was accepted, that this was actually a good time to increase our investment. And so back in 2009, we increased our marketing spend by 4.8%. And then in 2010, by over 14% on a global scale. And over the next 5 years, invested in excess of €1 billion euros more in marketing support. And surprise, surprise, you know, over that period of time, Unilever grew its business both in terms of revenue and profit, and it's nearly tripled its share price and provided tremendous shareholder return. So, you know, I know that's N equals one, one sample, but one I know well because I was heavily involved in it over those 9 years that followed the crash. And I would argue the same thing is true here. It's a very different circumstance, but the brands that invest responsibly with the right sort of messaging will come out of this even stronger than they went into it.
Yeah, I mean, that was something I wanted to discuss. You know, is there an opportunity there? There's, you know, tons of cheap inventory out there. You've got a noise reduction as, you know, your competitors dial it down. But I think you answered that. You sort of preempted my question there with that. But so I mean, you touch on, you know, what does good advertising look like in this sort of crisis? I mean, how do you be sensitive to the situation that's going on? You know, or you know, do you really need to be? Do you have to incorporate, you know, coronavirus into all your advertising, or can there be a, you know, some element of, you know, business as usual?
Yeah, I think it all depends on what brands and services you're in. And you're absolutely right. There are actually some good times to advertise right now because there are people dialing back, as you say. Also, actually, there's an explosion of people watching content during the day and watching content on TV and online, etc. I should hasten to add, it is called work from home. It isn't called watch content from home. So for all of those out there, you know, we need to make sure we come out of this strongly. So we do need to be, when you can, work from home, working from home as well. But the truth of the matter is there's a lot more content being viewed, which again, if you're building a brand, that's a good opportunity. Having said that, absolutely, you need to be respectful to where we are right now. But I don't think you need to have COVID-19 referenced in everything. Now, if you are a brand that is very relevant in this area, so again, I apologize for using Unilever as an example, but it's an example I know well, and it's better for me to use something I know well rather than make up an example. But they are doing advertising around hand washing. And of course, hand washing is incredibly important. And Unilever happens to be the largest soap company in the world. So you could think that if they did this incorrectly, they could be open to criticism. But in fact, when they do their hand washing ads around the world, I've seen them actually then not only put their own brands into the ad, but also putting competitors' brands into the ad as well, on the principle of make it more of a public service broadcast in approach. And of course, what we can also note is if they are the biggest soap company and people wash their hands more, then they'll disproportionately get the benefit. So I think I use that as an example to try and unpack that you can advertise, but you have to think of ways of doing it that actually has greater society in mind. On the other side, we also need a smile as well, and we need opportunities to have some relief from what is a very stressful time for people. So I think advertising that also brings some humour, and whether that be Coca-Cola and talking about not bringing everyone together, but you know, acknowledging the idea of social distancing, of course, helps deliver a message, but does it also in something very correct for the brand. So I think it needs to be really in the brand. And if you have been building sort of brands with purpose over the recent years, you'll be better placed take advantage of this than a brand suddenly coming into the whole area of purpose, and that might look a little bit more opportunistic. But I think the whole area of brands thinking about multi-stakeholders, being at service to society as well as the environment, not just their consumers or customers, is a way that the world has been going and actually will step change and accelerate, I believe, post this crisis. So the brands that were already thinking about how do they have a response beyond just their P&L to the stakeholders around them, I think the brands which will be best placed post all this, but also are the brands best placed right now to engage with people because it'll seem more authentic. It's, you know, you would imagine that brand would say that sort of thing as opposed to that brand's only saying that sort of thing because it's the time.
Yeah. And do you think any particular media channels stand to benefit? I mean, I'd imagine out of home are struggling at the moment, and are probably likely to for a while. But do you think there are big strategic shifts on that level? You know, do people, is there a sort of flight to safety where maybe more performance related advertising, or is TV, for example, a safe bet when we're all at home? Do you think any particular media channels stand to benefit?
Yes. So I think first of all, let's start off with the consumer, the viewer, the customer, and then we can talk about the brand. So what are people spending their time on? And you're absolutely right to say that people are watching a lot of TV. When I say TV, that could mean, of course, paid for TV, the Netflix and the Amazon, as well as ITV and Channel 4, etc. And why? Because I think people are looking for social experience as well. So we are all doing self-isolation. So it's quite nice to get together with whoever you might be sharing your flat with, at least watch something in a more sort of social experience. But then actually people are also spending an awful lot more time online. There's been the most amazingly creative, funny videos. I'm sure you've seen a few of them. As far as I'm concerned, you know, my WhatsApp is shining brightly with people sharing the most wonderful creative things that people are doing, but also brands are doing, which just give you a smile, and we all need a smile. But the area that's really exploded, of course, is e-commerce. And I think on things that will have changed permanently post all this will be online shopping. What we've seen is not only the people who were online shopping doing it more, and that's understandable because people are not wanting to go to shops, but people who weren't really into e-commerce have sort of been pulled into it. So probably people who would have adopted e-commerce over the next 10 years have now all adopted it now. And that's going to be a big step change post this. So if you're a brand or a retailer, you really need to think about what the impact of a step change in e-commerce is going to be post all this. So when we now turn to the brands and think about where you want to spend your money, well, actually, you know, e-commerce as a media channel is much more interesting than it was before. It was already interesting, but it's now much more interesting. And looking at social media platforms where people are spending time watching content, particularly amusing content, is an opportunity for you to engage people. And of course, the beauty of online is you can do much more data-driven marketing and indeed, as you say, performance marketing as well. So I would imagine people doing more of that and taking a multi-screen approach. So while potentially scaling back a little bit on advertising, I would hope not too much for their own sake, I can see a blend of multi-screen, which would combine the more broadcast approach with more data-driven and performance marketing, and particularly in the area of e-commerce.
Yeah. How do you think the TV industry stands at Bedford? I mean, I think they're seeing, do you think there's any chance, you talk about the changes in behavior, and I'm wondering with everybody returning to linear TV, at least to some degree, for things like, you know, certainly for news, not so much for sports. But, you know, do you think that we could reinvigorate, you know, linear TV for brands, or, you know, or is this going to be a sort of temporary change of behavior that will sort of return to normal once all this is over?
I don't know. It's very hard, isn't it, with a crystal ball to say which of these behavior changes are going to be permanent and which temporary. Certainly, I do think, as I say, the step change in e-commerce will be permanent. I think people will obviously drop back from the amount they're doing right now, but the amount of people who are now on e-commerce platforms will remain. So that, I think, that's a step function change. I think on TV, I think what's been very interesting, particularly coming back to the area which I think is so critical for advertising and for brands and the work that I'm doing as president of the Advertising Association, and that is around trust. What's been clear, if you look at the data, is people trust what they see on TV and through newspaper brands more than they do online. And that is accelerated. So I think the value we put on journalism and good quality journalism, while we might not articulate it as that, but that's how we are behaving, has gone up. And I hope that might be a permanent change, because I think valuing the independent and free press and also news reporting on television through the channels there as well is something which is a fundamental part of our democracy in sort of the freedom of good quality reporting and holding people to account and ensuring that sort of fake news is balanced out with news that is relevant and good. So I hope that trend remains. The viewing trend, I think, is going to be harder to predict. Having said that, when people do change behaviours and they like it, that often sticks, and it takes some sort of quantum change to get behaviour change. And of course, the quantum change we've seen on the other side, first of all, was the internet and the sort of the flood to people going on the internet. But then secondly, after that, an even bigger impact was mobile and the people having personal engagement through their own mobile and their own screen. And, you know, that trend was ongoing. And maybe something like this sort of then rattles and people realize the benefits or the enjoyment of spending time watching something together, even if you are then on social media or tweeting to your friends about what you're watching, you're still watching something together, even though maybe one step removed, not in the same room, but on the end of a mobile phone. And I think that is going to see a bit of a change. Now, initially, I think the impact on TV is going to be seeing, you know, budgets being squeezed. But then I think hopefully what we'll see is as the audiences improve, that TV becomes a more interesting place to invest as well.
I was just thinking about, you know, your career at Unilever. It's almost in lockstep with in time terms with the sort of programmatic revolution, which is very much, you know, in a strange place at the moment, as, you know, privacy regulations are being brought in, as third party cookies are you know, they're being sort of wiped out by the browsers. You know, in terms of what you were promised in the early days of programmatic, you know, do you think that programmatic technologies have delivered on their promises, or what's your feeling on that programmatic revolution and how it delivered for brands?
Yeah, so I was a big supporter, and still am, of programmatic. But programmatic used in the right way and in the right mix of what you're doing. I think more than ever, you need to have a professional media department inside a advertiser, inside a brand organization. And I think the professional media department will then help your marketers engage professionally with the advertising agencies and the media companies out there. I'm not for a second undermining the tremendous work that media agencies like, you know, GroupM and Mindshare, etc., do. Those are critically important for efficient and effective placement and buying of advertising. But I think if you don't have some expertise inside an advertiser, you could end up making mistakes that you'd regret. And I think programmatic slightly falls into that. So if I took you back a few years, you'll remember the big scandal, which YouTube were very much at the front of, about people saying that advertising was funding terrorist websites, even child pornography, and what were brands doing advertising on those. And there was a mass exodus of people pulling off YouTube, saying, you know, what's going on, I don't understand, etc. And it's true to say that there were some issues with the way YouTube were at the time, and they took it very seriously and have done a tremendous job of addressing that. And I think it's one of the unintended consequences of the explosion in video, etc. But I also think that a lot of the advertisers were making errors in the way they were buying advertising on YouTube and online. And of course, if you set programmatic to go and hunt the cheapest possible way of getting an eyeball, you might not get an eyeball. You might get an eyeball of a bot, and bots don't eat very much Ben and Jerry's. But worse than that, you could even get an eyeball in the wrong place and on the wrong sort of video platform. And that is maybe potentially a cheaper one, but you know, a terrorist supported website will be cheaper than a cooking channel, for instance. And so I think what happened is a lot of people let programmatic drive the agenda too much. And I would hasten to add that Unilever, who was then CMO at the time, did not have that issue. And we did not pull our advertising off YouTube, despite the vast majority of big advertisers doing that. We stayed on YouTube without the issue because we had tamed our programmatic against stricter guidelines to ensure that we weren't buying badly. And indeed, we're buying very effectively on YouTube, and then stayed with YouTube and worked with them to help them address some of the challenges they had, which I think they did very responsibly. So, you know, more work to be done, as always, in this area. But I think programmatic got blamed heavily for being irresponsible, whereas I'd argue that with good guidelines and a strong approach from the advertiser as well as the media agency, you might not be buying quite so cheaply, but you're buying a lot better. And if cheaply is buying a robot's eyes as opposed to human's eyes, then it's a false economy. Then if you wind it forward, then I know a lot of people have taken programmatic in-house. I would then argue again that's a dangerous thing, because this world is changing so quickly. I think you need to get relationships with your media agencies where you have real visibility and you really understand what's being bought through programmatic. But if you try and do it yourself, you will never keep up with the changes, and nor will you ever keep up with the quality of media resource you need to do it brilliantly well. And I know many of my colleagues who have tried to take it in-house and actually then put it back out again when they realize that, you know, it's a short-term gain and a long-term pain if you don't do it well. So I think programmatic done well and programmatic done professionally, but with then all the insurances that you have, third-party verification to make sure that you really understand what you're doing, is a good thing. Now, of course, you're right. It's all going to change, and it's going to change around data. And I think that's why it's so important now to have resources around first-party data as well as second- and third-party data, as you build brands going forward. Because with first-party data, then your performance marketing, data-driven marketing, precision marketing, all becomes a lot more achievable than relying on cookies, which are disappearing.
Do you think some brands just don't care about where their ads are shown? I did hear this morning of a DTC company that will remain nameless, and all they cared about was leads and transactions, and they literally did not care. They were quite happy for their ads to be shown against porn, wherever it was on the internet. They had literally no standard on brand safety. Once it delivered, you know, do you think there are many brands out there like that, or, you know, and what are the costs if your ads are shown adjacent to, you know, subpar content?
Yeah, so I think brand safety has been something that has become a word, that's big in the marketing world right now. And I think it's hugely important, because certainly from all the work that I did and am still doing, that where your brand is cited says something about your brand. And that's also true about you as a person. You know, where you go and who you're with communicates something about you. And I think brands are seen in the same way. So if brands turn up in areas which are inappropriate to the brand, I think that is negative for the brand. And I've got pretty good examples to show that. Now, that doesn't mean for a second there will be some players. I mean, there are always bad players, bad apples in a barrel who ignore that and don't think it's important and just say, well, we'll go for eyeballs no matter where they are. And it, depending what sort of brand you are, maybe you can get away with that. Certainly what I've seen is, it's like all these things, you know, how much risk do you want to take on as a business? You get away with it until you don't get away with it. And the second you don't get away with it is when your business folds around you. And I've known some marketers, even in good companies, who have, you know, thought, you know, empowered themselves to take these sort of risks that are then later on being pulled into line. What has happened is they thought it was a good idea, a clever idea, but actually, you know, brands actually make their money in the long term. You can get short-term gain, of course, but often when you're building a brand, you know, it's not the first or the second ad that makes you money, because at the end of the day, you're still building awareness and building a brand. But when you're talking about the fourth and fifth purchase, you're then starting making money. So, of course, you can have a short-term blip. But if you're in business for the long term, taking an approach to responsible advertising, will build your business in a more appropriate way. And that's why, from an ad association perspective, you know, we talk about promoting the role and rights of responsible advertising, because it does have a value to people, connecting people with brands and services they want to use. It does have a positive to society as far as supporting the free press and democracy and giving free entertainment and services like Google Maps, etc. It has value to businesses, economic growth for the businesses, and a vibrant growing business can pay their staff well and can employ more staff. And of course, finally, it has value to the economy. And so whether it be people, society, business, and the economy, and a growing economy is good for all of us. And as I said earlier, you know, £1 invested in advertising delivers £6 of GDP. So that was £142 billion in a year of GDP from advertising, which you can directly connect to. I could argue there's even bigger value than that, but those are proven reactions to investing in growing businesses. And I think that's exciting, and that's, you know, the case that we should make more clearly for advertising, which we don't.
Yeah, I agree. One final question. This is probably the most important question when we're all locked up in our homes. But what have you been binge watching at home?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't yet. Oh, sorry. I had a terrible answer. You're going to have to come up with another final question. That can't be my final question. The truth of the matter is, right now, I've been extremely busy. I hope it will settle down. But as I said, whether it be the charities that I'm a trustee on, or indeed the boards I'm a director on, there are so many challenges right now. I'd have to say I really reach out for the executives working in these businesses and charities with all the challenges they have. And one of the things I can do in my new portfolio role is to share experiences and learnings from one organization to another. Of course, keeping the confidential pieces confidential, but I can really add value even in things like how you communicate this to your staff and your employees, you know, because different people have good ideas and none of us are as smart as all of us. So over these last few weeks, I've been extremely busy engaging with different people. I also have an advisory business, Keith Reed Limited. So I've been doing some advisory stuff as well, leveraging my experiences. And the combined of all those means I'm a little bit too busy, busier than I planned. But as this all settles down, I will definitely get on to enjoyment of binge watching something. And I'm following on Twitter all the various advice that's out there. So I like the idea of maybe even going back to a show which I missed completely. I don't know how I did, but I missed completely. I'd like to see from the beginning The Sopranos. Everyone's talked heavily about The Sopranos. I never saw it, so maybe that's an opportunity to start something at the very beginning and view it.
Yeah, I can't recommend The Sopranos enough. Yeah, I've just finished my second viewing and it was even better the second time around. Keith, thanks so very much for taking part. It's been a real pleasure.
I've thoroughly enjoyed myself too. Thank you very much for your breadth of questions and the opportunity actually to not only reflect on the importance of advertising and some of the challenges right now, but also to actually look forward to the future. We, of course, need to keep safe right now, but we also need to prepare for the future. So don't think hibernation, think preparation, and how we make sure that we come out of this even stronger than we came in.